Welcome, everybody, to episode 306 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, February 28th, 2017. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by, I'll call you John this week.
Hi, John is okay. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself, sir?
I'm good. So you've got a new machine.
Yes. It's smaller. It was expensive. It's a powerhouse, but it was after 7 years.
Yeah, right.
It was a long time coming.
So I can see the box in the background. What did you end up getting?
I got, I actually went, excuse me, I still have a little bit of a cough, but I bought a pre-built. All these years I've been building my own computers, and now I've reached a point, you know, I'm in my 30s, so I'm old, and I don't want to mess with technology really anymore.
You're not old at all. Don't say that.
So I went into a Micro Center, and I bought a pre-built, and it just, I came home, and all I had to do was plug it in, and it works.
Right.
So, I mean, that's my kind of technology. So, I mean, I feel kind of bad that I didn't buy all the parts and put the thing together and finessed it a little bit. I just said to hell with it. I just want to buy something, bring it home, and start gaming. And that's exactly what I did. That's so awesome. I'm actually using Windows 10. I love Windows 7. I was not going to move away from Windows 7. Until somebody pried it from my cold, dead hands. But now I'm using Windows 10, and I've actually found it to be not bad. It's not too far away from what I was used to with Windows 7. I mean, there's UI changes and stuff like that, but, you know, these tiles and all that. But by and large, it's the Windows I'm familiar with, so I'm happy with that.
Good.
But maybe Windows 10 wasn't so bad. Maybe I had nothing to be afraid of.
Well, in every new version of Windows or anything, everybody complains or worries about gaming and how it's going to impact this or that. But it generally is as good or fine as it'll ever be. So that's good. What games do you usually play?
I just play PUBG and Rocket League. And I was getting sick and tired of getting like 30 frames per second when I was in a firefight in PUBG. And that usually never ends well. But now it's like, it's so nice. It's so nice to have all the friends.
You deserve it. That's good.
So we didn't have a show last week because I'd recently bought a new system, and I thought you were in Kansas, but it turns out this week you're in Kansas. Exactly where you are.
So I'm in Hutchinson, Kansas. So I'm hanging out at Sand Hills Brewing, Pippin Williamson's beer brewing venture, and he got his, I could probably show the audience, I could flip the camera around, but got his microbrewery license signed and delivered on Tuesday morning around 10 a.m. and promptly started brewing the first official batch of Sand Hills Brewing.
And LLC. Look at you there to help him kick it off. Imagine that.
Carrie and I are both here to help. Me, I mostly break stuff and ruin the drill and made a huge mess on one of the tanks, and Pippin dropped a glass full of yeast, but we made it out okay so far. Everything has been stuff you can kind of easily wipe into the drain, and nothing, no major damage. So we'll be able to taste some of this hopefully by the end of the week. And it's kind of awesome, actually.
I know Pippin's big, and he was doing his own craft beer. In fact, I've tried a couple of different samples at various work camps. Mm-hmm. He's gotten pretty good at it.
So now it's
actually official. He has an actual microbrewing license.
Yep. And so Pippin will probably do a better job of explaining it than I could, but it's kind of interesting because everything is largely set up within the confines of Sand Hills development as like one parent company. And so while there are DBAs and there are things that are set up to make sure that all of the proper legal taxation type things are in place and taken care of appropriately, that they're all kind of sort of owned by the company and our assets of the organization, and everyone is welcome and free to chip out and help with, you know, the brewing end or the software end or anything else. So we figured if this was the week to the license was coming, that we would want to drive down and start helping brew some beer and move some stuff around, clean things up, and get things ready. So Tyler's here, Daniel is here, Carrie and I are here, Pippin's here, and then just friends of Pippin's have been stopping by to come check stuff out. It's awesome.
I mean, the TLDR version of this is you're brewing beer with your boss.
Yes. So,
well, how about that? How about that?
We're sitting in a folding table, sitting at a folding table, drinking some craft beer and writing a bunch of code and talking about improvements to EDD and things that we are kind of been working on for a while.
Look at how far you've come.
Sugar calendar stuff. You know what? It's funny you mention that because it feels more full circle than it feels like I've come anywhere, because, you know, when we're talking 50 people at Automatic or 50 people at 10 Up, this is 15 people with Sandhills, and it's, you know, kind of like old times, really. It's but the sitting around and brewing and drinking beer weren't things that those folks did. So that part of it makes it, I think, a little extra fun.
You're back to being on a team that can all fit in one room.
That's exactly right.
So we got a host of things that I want to talk about today. We'll start off with, we'll say the G word, Gutenberg. We'll get that out of the way. Matt Cromwell, who is head of support and community outreach for GiveWP, is also an admin for the Advanced WordPress Facebook group, held a Q&A session with Matt Mulloway on, was it Monday? I believe.
I think so.
Yes, it was on Monday. And it was all about, of course, Gutenberg. So he asked a couple of questions. People were submitting questions through the Facebook app or Facebook website. And there's a couple of tidbits of information that that came out of this interview. One of the it sort of started off with Matt explaining why there's such a concerted effort to improve the editor. And he said, well, no, it's based on almost any user test that he watched, both people brand new to WordPress and those with years of experience, you know, how they use the editor. He says it became obvious we could make something more accessible to new users, but also a lot more powerful for developers. Now, there's also I didn't know this. I actually didn't know there was such a big emphasis on April in terms of a release date for WordPress 5.0 or even for Gutenberg. But it turns out that WordPress 5.0 is likely not going to be released in April. Mm-hmm. However, Matt did confirm that in April, there will be 1 to 2 times magnitude of users who will be exposed to or interacting with Gutenberg. So whether that's a push from within core or some sort of other promotional material that will get Gutenberg out to a lot more people, I don't know. But April is going to be the...
My guess is that Matt's chatting with hosts about getting Gutenberg pre-installed on things. Or, it would be weird to ship it with Jetpack, but, you know, it's just an editor. So some variation of it should be pretty easy to deploy somewhere. So if it's .com or if it's on Pressable sites or VIP sites, there's a lot of area and a footprint for Automatic to work with to try and get Gutenberg out there. So I like when Matt kind of coyly hints to these things, because it forces you to guess a little bit about where he's been having conversations and what's going to happen next. It's fun.
I took advantage of the opportunity to ask questions, and I asked him. I actually brought up the remember when we had a discussion about the Gutenberg name being deprecated, how it was brought up, and sort of the discussion we had. And Matt says, I asked Matt, well, will the name Gutenberg be duplicated? And he says, we'll see. But he doesn't think it's the most important thing to figure out right now. He says they're tackling some much bigger issues. The plugin is useful. We'll keep it around for beta testing, but if not, we'll have it turn itself off. So, I mean, the whole name thing, not really a big deal. I also asked if Gutenberg is going to exist as a project for other projects. I didn't get any confirmation on that. So there you have it. It's a pretty good interview. A lot of other interesting questions and topics that were discussed in there. And of course, we'll have it linked up on the show notes. And what was that? Are you next to a train track?
There are some trains going by. I can't see them, but I knew you'd hear them.
Yeah, I run out
to try and get you to see something, but Yeah, so I can mute myself while the train's going by. I don't know how long it's going to be, but I figured
That's
nobody
pretty
else
epic.
really wants to hear.
You know I like trains.
Downtown Hutchinson is pretty cool. I mean, it's like a lot of downtown places. I think it's a city of about 50,000 or 40,000 people, and so it's a lot of potential here. There's a lot happening, so it's cool.
Yeah, so yesterday I spent some time, a few hours reading a number of articles about the GDPR, which is
Oh yeah.
the General Data Protection Regulation that's coming out of the EU. In fact, it's going to the enforcement date's right around the corner, May
Sure is.
25th. And the more articles I read, the more head spinning I did.
Yeah.
And
Oh
I
yeah.
started thinking, once you start going through the regulation and you start reading all these blog posts and you start reading about a digital data officer, protection officer in these roles, and you start looking at these audit logs and things you got to look out for, and contact forms and data, and where's it going, who's doing what. For the think about the person out there, maybe a single site administrator or a site that
Right.
has one administrator, they have a contact form. Those people are going to be affected by this if the contact form, if they save entries from people who reside in the EU, the European Union, or over on that side of the country. And there's so much to take in with the GDPR, but I think for so many people, they're going to be hearing about this, they're hearing about it. Definitely if you're using Forms plugins, you've probably heard something about it. But there's It's so easy to feel overwhelmed and not
Oh,
really
yeah.
have nowhere to turn and not or not even know where to begin in order
Oh,
to see if A, if you have to be compliant, and B, what to do to get compliant.
yeah. Yeah, right.
So it's just this whole GDPR thing is crazy. And I was asking you some questions the other day, like, now I wonder how this translates into BBPress, where people sign up to a forum, there can I get registering, I guess, would be consenting, and they're publishing information. You're storing this information on your site. And one of the stipulations of the GDPR is that users should have the ability to download and access their data and have a request to remove it. And I was wondering, in BBPress, can a user like request that their account be removed and does the data disappear?
Yeah,
Or
right.
are you guys, within the BBs,
Yeah.
considering or going over all the various things that those projects have to consider for GDPR compliance?
Yep, that's the part. Remember when we talked to Heather, right, about
Yes.
GDPR specific things, and that's part of the chaos of talking about it in the GDPR compliance channel in Slack, is that every spiritual decision that is made, and every regulation that requires some level of compliance, it's difficult to not start thinking about how to solve the technical challenge. Because that's really what our jobs are. So, when someone's right to be forgotten exists, and they do have the right to delete all of their data and their content, what should happen with the content that is related to that content? And is anonymization enough? Versus purging all of that data from the literal from the database itself. And so this isn't just the BBs, it's kind of even comments in WordPress too, or posts. Let's say someone from the New York Times quits and says, I want all my posts gone. Well, the New York Times paid for that writer to write those posts. They are the owner of those posts. But that author has the right to be forgotten. What does that mean? And then what do you do with the comments that happen on those posts? And if a comment gets deleted that's hierarchical and has 30 replies underneath it, what do you do when you delete a parent comment or a forum thread? Do all of the replies get deleted, or where do they go? And so the analogy that I use for a lot of this is like, if you delete your email address, it doesn't delete the emails you sent me in my inbox. So that ultimately is the way that I imagine technically that a lot of this should work, but that doesn't mean I'm right. That's just my, that's the way that I think that this kind of almost has to work, is that if you choose to delete your account or you choose to delete your content that you've published, that shouldn't necessarily change the notifications or the replies to that content or the threading of that content. It really just should disconnect your authorship from that content in a way that no one would ever be able to tell that it was you that wrote it. But there are other implications too, with like, let's say that someone that is influential in a forum or a community, that for whatever reason, they rage quit or their account gets hacked or somebody deletes their content maliciously. And there is no undo button when it comes to deleting 50,000 forum posts or topics or replies. It is possible that you could do some pretty serious damage here too. And so there's a lot to consider, not just with GDPR, but privacy in general and what that means. Other community software like Reddit, I think, is a good example. They just put deleted in brackets. They just, you delete it, it shows up as deleted. But then people that in the Reddit community got sick of seeing that and think that deleted comments are dumb. So I think you can go to delete it, like DELEDDIT. Like somebody made a Reddit crawling site to archive copies of content so that when somebody deletes a post, that delete it can go and see who the original author was anyways. And so a lot of the stuff that you think that you're doing to do the right thing is still easily undone anyways. So like, I have a version of a solution to this problem, but that doesn't mean that my version is right. And it could just be based on my misunderstanding of GDPR, but I really think that we can't permanently delete any of this stuff out of a database. I think we kind of have to anonymize it. We can mark a user as deleted, but we can't actually delete every single piece of content from it because there are data retention laws, just like there are rights to be forgotten regulations. And so if as an open government, for example, my emails are subjected to open records requests. And I if I delete all of my emails, then I end up on the news. And so my right to be forgotten doesn't apply because my oath that I've taken as a village trustee and representative means that my content is public as public officials would be. So there's just a lot of overlap here. And because each one of these things is a technical challenge, there's a lot that we should have been talking about for years and lots of that I've been thinking about for years, but nothing that we've really been forced to talk about. So in Buddy Press Track, we have a GDPR master ticket. And BB Press, I think, is an easier solution than Buddy Press is. This is something that we are definitely heavily talking about.
So earlier this month, there was a new team, a group of volunteers. You sort of enlightened me to this. There's a GDPR compliance channel now that's on the that's on Slack. It's on the same group of same instance of where the core channel is for WordPress and the various other, you know, BB Press, Buddy Press, other channels. So there's quite a few people there, and they've gotten together and formed this team, and they've actually proposed a roadmap to add privacy tools to Core and to help Core WordPress become GDPR compliant. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that are some of the ideas that's been proposed is that adding notices for registered users and commenters on what data is collected in Core by default and explain why, create guidelines for plugins on how to become GDPR compliant, create and add tools to facilitate compliance and privacy in general, and add documentation and help for site owners to learn how to use these tools. And they're also discussing a number of other things as well related to GDPR compliance. You know, one of the things I've noticed some themes in all the information I'm reading about GDPR, there's a couple of common sense themes that stick out to me. And that is, just be upfront and concise about what data is stored, sent, and used on the site or forum. You have to give the user a chance to consent without automatically opting them in. Mm-hmm. Collect the least amount of data possible for legitimate business purposes and provide a way for users to download or access their data and remove it. Yep. Now, there's a lot more to the GDPR than that, but those are some of the common themes seeing. And really, those are common sense. But even though those are common sense things that will translate into GDPR compliance, mm-hmm. these are common sense things that are not, I mean, like, for instance, I use the Tavern's comment form as an example. How many times do you visit a contact form on a website and you see these fields and you're giving them information, but there's no explanation as to why those fields are required, where that information is going to go, where is it stored, how's it used? And these are the things now that people, if you have a contact form, that you're going to have to describe either in a privacy policy or privacy statement or even there on the form itself, which is something I'm going to be working on. And there's actually if you go to, I think it's GDPR, GDPRWP.com is the initiative that some folks are working on. And they actually have a plugin that has support for, I think it's Contact Form 7, Gravity Forms, and Ninja Forms. And they're adding a bunch of other forms too, where they provide options and tools to make those forms GDPR compliant.
One of the things that, like, you've heard me kvetch a little bit about with all of this is that when the way that WordPress and the web sort of works is that, especially with comment forms, the person who submits the comment sort of shifts the responsibility of the ownership of that content onto the site owner. And so if I submit a comment on the Tavern's comment form, we have always kind of just called it like, well, as soon as I hit submit, you owned my comment. Like, I gave you my commentary. It is your commentary now on your website.
And the act of commenting is consenting to whatever's going on there on the site.
And that has been a very convenient way to convince ourselves of something that I think we all knew wasn't really right. Is that it's kind of backwards. I should be able to own my content no matter where I put it, and I should have control over how and when it's visible or not. And granted, you don't want everyone to be able to go back and edit everything. It's the whole why let people edit their tweets kind of problem. But at the same time, you can edit my content on your website and my comment and make it look like I said something that I didn't say. And I guess what's better or worse at that point is having me edit it or having you edit it. And without me having the easy button that says, hey, wipe out all of my content across the web, hit the matrix style EMP that just blows all of my content off the web, I have to rely on a million different websites to delete anything if I want to be forgotten from these places. There isn't a registry for that. The databases aren't designed for that. We've had a lot of time to consider what improvements to this would look like, and we've never really bothered with it. So the plugin part of it for WordPress in WordPress is particularly challenging because we don't use like the types of database keys in our columns that make it easy to know if something is a user or a user ID or linked to my user ID for me being the author of a thing. And so the user ID columns that BuddyPress has, for example, are always named user ID, but in the notifications database table, we use a secondary item ID to occasionally mean a user. So it's never straightforward that some piece of data is connected to a user. And we don't have a straightforward or obvious way in WordPress core for plugins to leverage this. So unfortunately, every plugin that manages user data is somewhat on their own to do the responsible thing to make their own data publicly available or exportable or to notify users and site owners that this data is being collected for whatever reasons that it's there. It's just kind of a big hot mess. And I think that's why the GDPR compliance channel is kind of a little bit chaotic for most folks, is that the reality of this hot garbage fire is starting to take shape, and people just are not equipped to put the fire out right now. But working on it, I think.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned things that have been going on for years that were really quite, we've sort of kind of ignored. You know, I remember back when, first of all, I remember back in 2009 reviewing a plugin that would actually add a link to a privacy policy or allowed you to put a privacy policy below your comment form. So I thought I just kind of reminiscing about that. And I also remember about 10 years ago, the enormous amount of discussion and debate that took place on the Tavern forums about WordPress phoning home.
Yeah, right.
Why is it phoning home? Why is it sending this data? Why does it have to send the data? Why does it have this kinds of data? How come people don't know up front that it's sending this data? And the answer, a lot of times the answer was, well, WordPress is open source. You can go in, you can check it out. But it seems like nowadays, looking back on it, saying, well, the software is open source, so you can go in there and change it or stop it, is like kind of a cop out. It's like,
it's just not good enough anymore, right?
You know, there's a lot of discussion back in the day of why can't there be a privacy policy that users opt into during the install process that says, hey, WordPress needs so and so information, or it can even be a generic statement with a link to a privacy document on WordPress.org.
The counter argument is that even by giving users the option, or even by presenting them a screen that says, hey, this is all the stuff that we are going to use about you, everyone is just going to look at it and go, well, of course, this is what you're using. If I want to continue, I've got to check the box. And so, okay, here we go. And then the intent of the educational and awareness part of what everyone is doing is lost anyways. Like, of course, your iPhone and your Android phone need to phone home to an app store to get updates. Of course they do. Duh, they have to do that. And so plugins have to phone home. WordPress has to phone home. Those are things that have to happen. And the data that's collected when they're phoning home, is it possible to be more open about that? Sure. Is it valuable to be more open? No, probably not to most people. Like the crash data and the logs that get sent to Apple when an iPhone app crashes are megabytes big and XML files that are in no way human readable. Do you care about what every key and value is that they're looking at and why? Someone probably does. Most people probably do not. Like, are we going to care eventually when your self-driving automobile needs to phone home to figure out what lane to use or what the speed limit is?
I also thought about the instance that we could run into where we're already bugged by all these admin notices by plugins. So what if we get to a point and now we have data and notices everywhere from every plugin and every theme, and we have to opt into all these
things? We are. That's exactly kind of what we're working towards. And I think that's why ultimately it really is important that WordPress core come with some solution for this, some hook, filter, action, place, API, idea, approach, philosophy for where does this stuff go? Where do you hook in? What's the right thing to do as a plugin author here? Because until that happens in WordPress core, every single plugin author is going to scramble to try and do it themselves. And maybe there's something to that. Like, the chaos of it means the best approach will bubble up to the top and everyone will eventually go that way anyways. And so that seems to work okay. But for that year or two, while everyone's figuring it out, plugins suffer, users suffer, developers hate their lives. It's just, it's not a whole lot of fun. And so some direction from WordPress core itself would be useful. But ultimately the problem with WordPress core and users is that the user profile page is just so bad that it's so long and ugly that where do you put it in there? I don't want another separate user profile tab area. That's what WordPress.com had. Users didn't like it. Automaticians didn't like it. And it just doesn't look or feel right that way. So what we need to do something with the user profile section to introduce a privacy tab or a settings tab specifically where you can opt in and out of things. You can do some kind of diagnostic report or background check on yourself to see What does the site know about you? Like, we need a place for that to live in WordPress core. And until that happens, every single plugin is going to try and invent their own.
So to sum this all up, the GDPR in WordPress is a hot mess.
Hot garbage fire.
Hot garbage fire. But, yeah. You know, and as we get closer to the date, things will work out. We'll understand more of the do's and the don'ts. And we'll see what happens, you know, as everybody kind of comes back into compliance.
The GDPR compliance channel in Slack is super active. There's a lot of conversation. There's a lot of moderation. There are a lot of people steering the conversation. It's largely led by Andrew Oz and Heather, who was on the show before a couple of months back, is helping a lot. Paul Zemensky from Automatic is in a lot of a couple other attorneys from other areas, plugin developers, authors, themers, concerned parties, users, docs. I mean, everyone is jumping in. So kudos to everyone for the effort there. It's kind of Gutenberg-esque, honestly. Everyone's kind of in and trying to do what they can to help. And so progress is being made, but it's still tough. It's still scary.
Gravity Forms and Ninja Forms both have documentation or posts available that describe GDPR compliance and how you can make your form compliant. Those who use the contact form module on Jetpack like I do on the Tavern, which saves entries to the database by default, I'm going to have to wait for updates on whatever features they decide to add that will allow me to be in compliance with the GDPR. WooCommerce and Automatic have both announced that they expect their products will be compliant by the time it goes into effect later this year. And with Jetpack and the modules and the services, I am looking forward to. I'm interested to see how they make Jetpack as a whole with all its various modules compliant with the GDPR. That just seems like top of my head, a monumental task.
What kind of obligation does a service like Akismet have? Clearly, Akismet's whole business is profiling every single one of us that post a comment to decide whether or not we're spam. Do you get to ask Akismet, hey, y'all, what do you know about me? And I want you to delete me so I can start over. I don't know. There's weird stuff. I'm sure you know more than I do, but just thinking off the top of my head.
It's funny you mentioned Akismet because there was an article on WPMUdev.org. I think this was back in, when was this? This was November 1st of last year. And the author of the article actually contacted Akismet and asked them what happens to personal data when it checks WordPress comments for spam. And they said that they're working on getting into full compliance with GDPR by the time it goes into effect next year. And he says that the only information sent to Akismet when a comment is tested for spam is information that the commenter provided. So that's their name, email address, site URL, and comment, plus other non-personal information like the current time. Mm-hmm. He says, this information is not transferred to any non-Akismet servers, but we cannot guarantee in which country it will be processed. To that end, we have signed model contract clauses with our Irish subsidiary that cover the transfer of data in and out of the EU for processing.
Interesting.
So they've already made some moves there, but it's just right to request complicated. An
export. If I want to export, like, hey, Akismet, what do you know
export
about
your spam? From Akismet.
It's kind of weird, right? Like, I don't know. There's just a lot to consider.
There's a lot to consider. Speaking of a lot to consider, something else I want to have a pretty good conversation about is AMP, Accelerated Mobile Pages, created by Google, released in 2015. It's an open source project. And I've been reading a lot about AMP. Most of it not good. A lot of it saying how AMP is bad for the web. But so I just want to talk to you about a couple things. Do you use AMP? I don't use AMP. I've visited sites that use AMP, and I see that I'm always trying to click the link so I can see the actual website and not the AMP version, even though the AMP version is pretty fast. But I don't use it. Have you used it?
No. I've played with it, the various plugins and I understand, and I think most people that don't like it, I think understand the problem that it's trying to address. And it's a it is a problem, I think, across the web. But this is
Well, let's start off with explaining what AMP is. It's Google's attempt to provide a much better user experience for those on mobile. So it strips everything away from your site that's unnecessary, that's not needed. It lazy loads images, and it provides an experience. It's a standard by Google, but it's a standard that it's not recognized by the worldwide consortium, you know, W3C, the people who actually make standards for the web. This is Google's silo or attempt, their version of what the mobile web should be.
That's right. That's exactly right. It is advanced mobile pages, and it is one company and a very intelligent group of people trying to solve the problem of just crappy, bloaty websites. And to make them function in a more universally friendly type way on mobile devices. And this is one of those things where we've kind of talked about before, where it is a solution to this problem. People don't like that it is one version of somebody's solution to this problem. People don't trust when the big old folks try starting to make decisions and guide people down a path that they don't understand or haven't been a part of or don't think that they need in their lives. And those are all completely 100% valid points, in my opinion. The fact that it is Google doesn't help. The fact that Google is kind of that they own the browser, they own the operating system for a lot of folks. They own the DNS servers. They have Google Fiber, where they own the actual hardware and the lines. I mean, Google is really trying to make sure that you are using something that tells them what you're using every step of the way. And so if you hit an AMP page for my website, I may or may not have any control over that version of that site. And it, in its own way, it does the opposite of what everyone is afraid of with net neutrality, where it kind of just says, well, we're going to create our own version of everything. We'll create our own accelerated mobile pages for every website, and we'll just keep a copy of it over here. And then anytime that we want to serve up a version of your website, we will with our tech. It's kind of it's an interesting long game that may actually work for them, because so few people, I think, really care that this is a thing.
It's their attempt. It's their competitive attempt to combat Facebook instant articles, which was Facebook's attempt at doing this.
Instant articles and Apple News too. Apple News, you have to build a thing for, and you have to set it up to get ingested into Apple News. But Apple News is just a reader. Everyone, it's weird how everyone abolishes their RSS reading software and then tries to reinvent the equivalent of RSS with a lightweight, content-only version of everybody else's websites by owning it in a different format and way.
The reason why I've been reading so much about AMP lately is because of, well, Automattic has a relationship with Google that was announced. It began last year where there's a official Google AMP plugin for WordPress. I think it's called AMP for WordPress. Yep. And it was a lot of work was done to add AMP and support AMP for the VIP product at WordPress.com. Mm-hmm. And recently, things kind of dropped off there with VIP, but recently XWP got involved with Automattic and really ramped up what was going on in WordPress for AMP plugin. In fact, they just had AmpConf, which is a whole conference dedicated to AMP. And there's an entire video dedicated to all the progress that's been made with the AMP plugin for WordPress. And there's this relationship where, so Automattic is a company that it's a champion of the open web. Matt is a champion of the open web. And there are so many prominent people in the tech community that explain why AMP is bad for the open web. I put on Twitter, I'm a little confused about all this. And Matt actually responded to me, Matt Mulligan, and he says early versions of AMP had some not great things in it, like the way caches worked and the URLs. Has come a long way and is headed in the right direction. I think it's really important for making the web relevant in the mobile world. So he's obviously a big fan of AMP and likes where it's going. And in fact, when we interviewed him and we talked about the Guten theme, he had mentioned something about wanting to see me with canonical AMP URLs in the Guten theme, which I thought was interesting. But if you look at the videos from AmpConf and some of the other talk that's going around, AMP possibly, you know, a track ticket and AMP possibly being merged into Core is a distinct possibility.
Sure.
So I don't know. It just, I have a hard time wrapping my head around how we're so much for the open web, but here we are supporting a one company's version of how mobile should be on the web, and that's open.
So it's kind of tough. And the fact that Google is putting a huge amount of resources into it doesn't help the perception of the kind of clear and evident bias that there's going to be with this kind of thing. Like, someone had to invent RSS, and the person who happened to invent it could have sold it to Microsoft specifically, or anybody way back in the early days of it, but chose not to. They chose to make it open and keep it open, and that usually wins. Usually being open and free and kind of unaffiliated is best. But it, as a group of inside baseball users, that matters to us. You know, when MySQL becomes sort of part of the Java, the Oracle family, everyone goes, ugh, okay, well, let's move to MariaDB. Let's go to the independent solution. Let's go to the little guy. We're safer there. We feel better there. But unfortunately, the little guy is barely a sustainable organization like Oracle or Automatic or Google. They are a sustainable, viable, profitable business. They do kind of suck a lot of the air out of the room. It makes it hard for anyone to compete because they are so big and can move and compete in other ways that independent little people always can't compete with, or can't get the distribution for, or get the attention of the web like Google can. There are a million other people that are trying to work on something similar to AMP. They're just not Google, so nobody cares. What does that mean? I mean, we just spent the past 10 years of the web trying to push responsive design instead of having an alternative style or design for your mobile version of your own website. And now Google's going to invent the same thing that we just spent 10 years trying to avoid doing. What was the plugin that gave your WordPress blog like an actual mobile site that had like an iOS looking theme on it?
That was a pretty popular one. WP Mobile or something?
And so that was, I mean, kind of the thing that I have said this entire time is like, responsive is great, but it isn't right. What we should be doing is designing websites for the medium that they're being used on. If it's being used on a TV, it should look different than if it's being used on a phone or a watch. And it's not just screen size, it's headphones or input devices or mice or whatever. We should be smart enough to make websites that adapt, but instead we're not. And we pushed for responsive instead, which is fine. But the end result is that a company like Google or anyone is going to go, you know what? This responsive thing still ain't cutting it. Websites are still too slow. They're still too bloated. Let's solve this problem a different way. And so that's what they're capable of doing. And they have the rest of the infrastructure to do it in a way that nobody else can. Facebook maybe kind of could. Amazon even to a certain extent probably could. But eventually, who's to stop someone like Time Warner or Spectrum Cloudflare, anybody could say, you know what, if you're serving your website off of our servers to improve the performance and the user experience of everyone that's visiting all of our Amazon AWS servers, we're giving them our own version of mobile pages so that they have a better browsing experience. You didn't ask for that, but you're going to get it. And that's potentially the future that we're working towards with AMP, which is why I think a lot of people are afraid of it.
And John Gruber's Daring Fireball has been very vocally adamant against AMP. And he says that, yes, AMP pages load fast, but you don't need AMP for fast loading web pages. If you're a publisher and your web pages don't load fast, the same solution is to fix your bleeping website so that the pages load fast, not to throw your hands up in the air and implement AMP. Yes. And that's another thing people should realize is that, yeah, AMP is fast, but you could do everything that AMP does on your own website without handing the key over to Google.
Yep. This is like, so the one thing, I've probably said it on the show, but I've definitely said it before, that like, I always think that like turn signal indicators on your car mirrors are funny. Like the blind spot, like there's someone in your blind spot. If you're driving somewhere on the freeway and there's a car that's hovering in your blind spot, they are kind of the jerks in the scenario. You wanting to merge over to where they are and having a little indicator on your mirror doesn't help them get the heck out of your blind spot. Why are they hanging out in a place where they shouldn't be hanging out in a car? Like the blind spot indicators on your side view mirrors don't really do anybody any good. What they do is make drivers lazy. They make drivers look for the indicator. If there's no indicator there, they just move over. An indicator is not always right, and it probably causes more accidents than it avoids if you're paying attention to the road. It causes people to be lazy instead of paying attention to the missile that they're driving on the road. And so it would be a better indicator if a car would tell you that you're hanging out in someone else's blind spot and to not do that. But we don't solve that problem because that's a harder problem to solve. And so instead, we have solved the problem in the wrong way that has only kind of made the entire driving experience worse. And so that analogy is kind of what AMP is. People can't build websites that are small and fast and instead are just bloated and full of crap. Then we build the solution that undoes all the crap that someone else has built. It just on the surface doesn't make any sense. It kind of rubs me the wrong way, but I don't know that that matters. I don't know that that matters to the web or to users. Users want faster pages and better experiences. And if AMP ends up crappy and sucking, then people just won't use it. They'll just avoid using it, which is what I think most of us do already. We hit an AMP page and go, let's go someplace else. And so if that's ultimately what we do, then Google will be able to see that because ads won't, the ads that they would want to serve, they won't get that revenue. They won't serve those ads. No one will click those links. Some people will, but if enough people don't, then that particular initiative by Google will have potentially failed and something else will hopefully come in and succeed.
There's a lot of other issues with AMP too, like specifically how it works. I found interesting reading about that today. We're gonna get somebody who knows a lot more about AMP. And maybe even get some folks from Google on the show, maybe from XWP, and talk a little bit more about this AMP and partnership. We'll get things squared away.
That would be cool. Because I don't really need someone to convince me that AMP is cool, because I think it's cool. I more want someone to convince me that, like, this is actually the right idea. Because that I'm not convinced that it is. Well, I don't need to be sold, I guess. No one should come on the show and sell me. Who gives a crap about me? But it'd be interesting to hear someone from Google's perspective on it.
So Automattic now has a new role. It is the president role of the company.
And I know.
They've hired Kinsey Wilson, led the digital transformation at USA Today 15 years ago. He was at NPR and at the New York Time. So they actually created a new role Automattic for him, just for him, the president.
This was what Matt was alluding to when he was hanging out with us. You know, there was another rock star hire coming in.
Oh.
That was
kind of like
John Maeda. This is a big deal. This is another really influential, deeply experienced, super good, kind of just a good talent acquisition for everyone at Automattic. And there are folks there that will and have looked up to him as a mentor. And it's neat. It's really cool.
Shows you how out of touch I am. I never heard of Kinsey until this news broke.
Had you heard of John Maeda?
I've no, not really. Not John either.
Yeah, see,
I'm just in the wrong tech circles, or I'm not paying attention. Who knows?
Mark Jakewith would make fun of me because I have a story about Jeffrey Veen from WordCamp San Francisco where I didn't recognize him. I was like, oh, no idea who that is. So you're not alone, but yeah.
So pointer.org has a pretty cool interview they did with Kinsey. And when they asked him what the scope of his duties will be, he said that the president role is a new one for WordPress.com, and it coincides with the period of tremendous growth and organizational change within the company. As the company has expanded, the leadership demands on Matt and the rest of the team have grown as well. He says that he thinks he can help the organization sharpen its focus as well as evolve to meet the challenges that come with rapid growth and a competitive marketplace. Mm-hmm. And I realize that Automattic is nearing 700 employees. And, you know, mm-hmm. they have WooCommerce, they've got Jetpack, they've got Matt's Gutenberging everything with WordPress, and they're experiencing a lot of growth. So I thought it was sort of a little bit of insight there and into, you know, Matt's busy doing WordPress and has his product hat on. He's probably still doing interviews to hire people, that maybe it just made sense finally. The company's so big that now we have a president dedicated to doing all this stuff.
Yep. And I'm convinced it'll be 1,000 people by the end of the year. There's just no stopping it now.
So somebody on Twitter mentioned that somebody should do like what Scott Berkin did with A Year Without Pants, where he wrote about his experience when the company was a lot smaller than it is today. And I liked your pun, by the way, the name of the book.
Yeah. The decade acquiring pants.
Yes. I was thinking about this, like Scott Berkin's book, it's a great read. If nobody has checked it out yet, I very much encourage you to read. It's called The Year Without Pants. It provides a glimpse inside the way Automattic was working at that, the way the company worked and its structure at the time. And, you know, I was thinking, is there anybody else? I mean, I don't know of any other automaticians who have mentioned that they're going to write a book, or you don't really get to know how it is inside of Automattic unless you talk to an automatician and you know the right questions to ask them, and they're willing to open up to you to tell you about what's going on there. And that's what Scott's book did. It gave you a glimpse, a window into how things were run within Automattic at the time. So I'd totally read a book about, you know, how things work inside the company now internally and what's changed, and especially from an organizational point of view.
I would too. I think a lot of people would. I think it's a cool idea.
So I want to, you know, so we can get Scott rehired at Automattic, get him on another project, and, you know, see if it works that way. But I'd actually like to have somebody who's been there for years that experienced this growth firsthand within the company. I'd like to get their experience and have them write the book.
That's an interesting idea too. There's lots of folks that are still around, so. You know, it's a lot of people that write publishing software, so they should be decent writers, I guess, right?
You'd think. Right. So, man, almost 1,000 people. Automattic's growing. They're turning into a big company.
Not going to get smaller.
That's right. Well, that's all I had on the docket today. Look at that, 4 minutes. 4 minutes in from being a
complete good. Out. My laptop's going to die soon too, so it's right on schedule.
Is there anything else that sort of was on your mind briefly?
Nothing.
You
wanted to mention? Nothing. Nothing at all.
All right. So, that's. oh, there's the cough again. No visit from Smokey today. He's actually taking a nap with my wife. But that's going to do it for. Oh, John disappeared. Maybe the laptop battery died or something. I don't know. But that's going to do it for this episode of WordPress Weekly. We'll be back again next Wednesday. You can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes on wptavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffer, JEFFR0. And we'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. Say bye, John. See, he disappeared. He's not here. I'll do an impersonation. Bye, John. So long, everybody.